From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. There is bad news about the global climate every single day. We are burning more fossil fuels instead of less. The predictions are more dire than scientists thought, and the impacts are shattering. Deadly wildfires, superstorms, and unseasonal hurricanes, horrendous heat waves. Glaciers are melting, whole species are disappearing, and there are seemingly insurmountable political obstacles to doing anything about it. We've resorted to turning on one another and laying blame for using too much plastic or too much water or eating meat and so on. It appears as though our human brains are not quite capable of tackling such a massive existential crisis. Showcasing the doom and gloom doesn't seem to work. In fact, it may be having the opposite effect, causing us to retreat. Now, a new book aims to convince us that art, creativity, and even irreverence are necessary to move forward on climate change, and that environmentalists perhaps need to shed their reputation of being killjoys. My guest is Nicole Seymour. She's an assistant professor of English at California State University at Fullerton. Her earlier book was called Strange Natures, Futurity, Empathy, and the Queer Ecological Imagination. She now joins me to discuss her new book called Bad Environmentalism, Irony and Irreverence in the Ecological Age. Welcome to the program, Nicole.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So how do we know for sure that the more we fixate on the impacts of the crisis, the more of an opposite effect we have? I sort of think of, you know, if you go to the doctor and the doctor tells you, if you don't stop smoking, you will die early. And that doom and gloom scenario is sort of a necessity for, you know, if I were a smoker, for me to stop smoking. And so we sort of expand that naturally to the environment, the climate is warming, and if we don't do anything about it or do something about it, we will all die. But that doesn't seem to work to expand it from the personal to the humanity as a whole.
Right, right. So there's a scholar I draw on my book named Kari Norgaard, who's found that exactly as you're saying, that the more you know about climate change, actually the less likely you are to do something about that. And by that, she finds that people just become so emotionally paralyzed, so overwhelmed that, like you said, it has the opposite effect. And so I'm interested in looking at artists and activists who are trying to take this different tack, right? To sort of even celebrate something like ignorance and celebrate something like irreverence. So maybe we don't need to understand all the details of climate change in order to act, right? So that suggesting that maybe everything we've always assumed was true about environmentalism, like that you have to understand, you know, scientific concepts in order to act, or that you have to do things perfectly in order to be an activist, they're really trying to throw those things out the window and saying, you know, what if we just did environmentalism in a different spirit, in a different mode or tone?
And do we find that, because of course the issue of climate denialism is a really big deal. We have people at the highest levels of our governments telling us that there is no such thing as climate change. And so for a long time, climate activists felt that countering the denialism was absolutely critical because people trust their politicians, or some people trust some politicians.
Right. Well, again, we're finding that that doesn't work, right? And sort of backing up for a moment, I think, is important and saying, well, why is it that people deny climate change? Is it because they truly don't understand? We've given them all these facts, right? We've tried to explain it to them, right? And they're still denying it. So maybe there's, for example, an emotional reason, or maybe they're towing a party line, right? If their political party says climate change isn't real, maybe they're just echoing that, right? And I think we have to understand that perhaps we, you know, rational knowledge is actually informed a lot by emotion, right? So maybe people are understanding this issue through emotion and not through rational facts, right? And so, again, these artists and activists that I'm looking at are sort of following that line of thought, right? That maybe just shoving facts down people's throats, maybe just giving all the data is not working. So maybe we should try drag performance, right? Maybe we should try stand-up comedy, that there's other ways to go about it. And also what these activists and artists are doing is not just trying to, for example, you know, convince climate deniers or something. at times I'm finding that they're actually just acting out the absurdism and ironies that already exist, right? So in the fact that we have overwhelming information that climate change is real and is happening, and yet some people deny it, that's an absurdist situation, right? That's a ridiculous situation. So oftentimes what these artists and activists are doing is just sort of drawing attention to the ironies and absurdities that exist in the world, and just trying to express that, right? So that's sometimes their objective.
So this has always been a thread through any type of activism, though, hasn't it? I mean, wasn't it Emma Goldman who famously said, "If I can't dance, I don't want to be part of your revolution." There's always been creativity in activism, no matter what kind of activism you're talking about. So I imagine environmental activists have a long tradition to be able to draw from historically, not just in the US, but around the world, of how to make activism funny, enjoyable, creative, and therefore effective. Because no matter what issue you're talking about, it's generally kind of a downer, labor violations or child abuse. I mean, okay, maybe we should put aside child abuse. That one's a really tough one, but so many issues are, by their nature, doom and gloom issues.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I think that I go as far back as the 1960s simply because I'm a contemporary scholar, and so I'm sure there's books that could be written about the role of humor in the original suffragist movement in the U.S. I mean, I have no idea what that would be, but I would read that book. So definitely, I'm just focusing on a more recent phenomenon. Mainly 1990s forward, but I do draw on some work that was happening in the 60s and 70s and 80s, and just showing again that there's, as you mentioned, there's this creativity. There's this. I think a lot of the activism and art that I'm talking about simply hasn't been recognized, or hasn't been recognized as environmentalist, and that's what I'm trying to say is, something like the Wild Boys TV show that was on MTV that I discussed, right? People don't, when you ask someone, "Oh, name an environmentalist TV show," it's probably like the very last thing they would mention. And so part of what I'm trying to do is to say, hey, this is doing environmental work. We just don't recognize that it is, because we assume that environmentalism has to be serious, has to be sanctimonious, has to be depressing or sentimental or what have you. So part of my project here is to try to recuperate or recognize and sort of draw together these texts and show that there has been this pattern over the past 30, 40 years.
I confess I've never heard of Wild Boys till I picked up your book. Tell us a little bit about this TV show and why it, in your view, actually fits this description of climate activism.
I guess I'd say it's in addition to climate activism, it's also doing education and activism around habitat destruction, species extinction, and things like that. So it's a TV show that was a spin-off of Jackass, which was known for being that sort of prank show where people, set firecrackers off out of their butt and things like that. I can't even describe some of the things
Yeah, maybe don't.
Yeah, so they spun off this TV show called Wild Boys that is basically a nature program parody. So it's doing the sorts of things you see on Animal Planet that you would see in a David Attenborough show. It even has like a fake British voiceover and that sort of thing. So it's making fun of that genre, but at the same time, it's actually teaching you things about these animals. So they'll talk about the batfish and how ugly the batfish is, and then give it a kiss and put it back in the water. And so you're again, if you're watching the show, you're probably, I don't know, a teenage boy, and you're watching it because it's funny, but you're actually potentially learning things, right? Or getting information about animals. And the Wild Boys always say, we joke around a lot, but we actually love animals. And both of the Steve-O and Chris Pontius, who are the main actors in the show or performers in the show, they're both vegetarians. Actually, Steve-O's a vegan and has been an activist against SeaWorld and keeping whales in captivity and things like that. So they're really they're, I guess I would say they're walking the walk, but they're not talking the talk, if that makes sense. So they're doing environmental work, but they're not doing it in the spirit that we expect, or with the same tone or comportment that we would expect.
So humor is an important tool, and often humor we found is a great way to talk about serious issues such as, racism or sexism. You can actually use humor as a very effective tool to change our culture. How does one find the funny in almost certain climate apocalypse? I mean, the news this year in particular, 2018, is so bad that I have a hard time finding a way to be humorous about it. Or is it that humor, that we have to employ humor and creativity if we really want to get out of this?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a couple of things I'd say. You know, in some senses, humor is functioning as a survival mechanism for some of these artists and activists that are trying to find a way to like keep going, right? Again, how do you keep going in the face of this terrible, terrible news? Sometimes you have to laugh about something in order to go on, to let off steam, to, you know, to function emotionally. But also I'd say that the humor, it sort of depends on, you know, I think about the distinction people make between punching up and punching down, right? So if you make fun of, we mentioned child abuse earlier, right? If we made fun of the limitations of child protective services, that would be punching up, right? That would be, you know, poking fun at the man rather than actually laughing at a child, which would be horrible, right? So again, where these artists and activists are finding humor is not in, you know, death or suffering or anything like that, but just sort of in this existential crisis that we find ourselves in, or in the you know, inaction of the government, right? So it's, again, it's, you know, it's classic political humor, sort of poking fun at, again, the man, right? Poking fun at people who are preventing us from achieving our activist goals. So it's, but it is a very tricky, you know, it's, you got to be careful. And sometimes, you know, I talk about a couple jokes that don't land in the book. And I appreciate what these figures are trying to do, right? Which is, like you're saying, to find a new way to communicate information that just doesn't seem to be reaching certain groups of people.
I think what you said about humor being a coping mechanism is so critical, because it is so easy to be overwhelmed by how we think about the climate these days. And those of us who are on top of it, you know, journalists like myself are hyper aware of every detail of climate science, and every mundane action, even outside of our work, takes on new significance. I found myself the other day feeling down about the heavy rains we were getting, thinking of extra rain in terms of the climate, when once upon a time I just enjoyed the rain because it was raining. And so the weight of it can be overwhelming. And so humor is certainly a great way to get through that. And I'm wondering if you think that today's climate activists, because there really is a resurgence of climate activism, there's a new era of it, whether people are seeing that cultural shift, rather than, you know, publishing a new book about details of the latest science on climate, that engaging in creative activism is the way to go. Are they purposefully using some of the things that you write about in your book as tools?
Yeah, absolutely. There's, I talk about a group called Queers for the Climate that have been participating in the People's Climate March, and they're, you know, trying to draw connections between LGBTQ issues and experiences and environmental issues, right? To show that LGBTQ folks have a particular investment in environmental activism. But again, they're being playful, right? They're dressing in drag, they're dressing in, you know, crazy glittery costumes and dancing around at the People's Climate March. So doing that work, but doing it in a different spirit. Another thing that jumps to mind that I ran out of time to talk about in the book, you know, you always discover new things as soon as the proofs are to the printer.
Right.
No, I want to talk about this, but there's something called the Fossil of the Day Awards that have been given out at the last couple UN climate summits, the COP, right? I think we're at COP24.
Right.
So every meeting for the past few years, they've presented a Fossil of the Day award to the worst country in terms of upholding their climate commitments. And they have their logo kind of looks like the Jurassic Park logo. And they have a little song, a little chant, Fossil of the Day, Fossil of the Day, who is the worst? Who is the worst? Or something like that. And they have a person dressed up like a dinosaur that's dancing around and hands out the award. So I think at COP24, Germany has received one. And of course, the United States always seems to get a Fossil of the Day award. So I think those are examples of how climate activism has inspired maybe sort of unexpected demographics of people, such as LGBTQ folks, to connect their struggles together with climate struggles. And we're seeing just all sorts of creative, innovative of unexpected performances and images and so forth. And so I find that very exciting and invigorating.
Humor is also often a great tool to equalize power differences between those in power and those who don't have power. I'm thinking of the, you know, the court jester kind of attitude. Is it important for us to laugh at our politicians, the ones who, in the face of so much evidence, still continue to spout absolute nonsense?
I mean, absolutely. That's part of what a lot of these, a lot of the texts that I look at, a lot of the TV shows and films and poems I look at are directing their ire at politicians in a funny way. But one thing I think is actually really interesting is that almost every single thing I look at in the book, the performers or the artists or activists or whoever it is poking fun at themselves. And I find that to be very important because that keeps them from, you know, humor can be very sanctimonious, right? Humor, we can be very smug when we're making fun of someone that we think is worse than us. And, you know, humor can be very self-satisfied. And so I think it's important that these figures are poking fun at themselves to prevent that kind of sanctimony, right? So to prevent their humor from being only outwardly directed and not inwardly directed. So, you know, the well boys make fun of themselves and how inept they are and how stupid they are, for example. And you see that in the other texts I look at. So, yeah, the humor goes in multiple different directions, depending on the case.
Right. I'm glad you brought that up because, yes, unfortunately, environmental activists and other people too have a poor reputation of being self-righteous and having this attitude of they're the only ones who see how bad it is because they're the only ones who seem to be taking it so seriously. Therefore, it might be their job to draw attention to everything. And you know, we also have environmental activists, unfortunately, whether it's deserved or not, have a reputation for being a little bit not all there. The tree huggers, the vegans who eschew leather or honey, and that too. I mean, so there's fodder there for to certainly make fun of oneself and maybe even embrace the weird, right?
Right. I mean, we were talking earlier about humor and playfulness being important in lots of different movements, but I think environmentalism in particular, as you're saying, has this specific reputation, I think probably along with feminism, a particular reputation for being killjoy, for not being self-reflexive, for being like no fun at a party, right? So I think it's important, especially at this moment of crisis, that environmentalists are starting to take a look at themselves, right, and laughing at themselves as well as at the problematic politicians.
So are there certain tips that you can give for those people who might be watching? There's a lot of young people, as I mentioned, who are in part of this, you know, new and growing wave of environmental activism. And of course, there is always a place for sort of serious activism, for even creativity that might be serious. But any tips for how to make one's activism irreverent and how to, you know, engage in that kind of dialogue that often does result from approaching something in a kind of an absurdist way?
Well, lots of things to say. I'm glad that you brought up the notion of young people, because I think that's for someone who's not quite so young anymore, I think that's been the most exciting, hopeful moment to come out of recent times. You know, I'm thinking of the Parkland kids and just seeing youth really being reinvigorated, of course, for horrible reasons, right? Reinvigorated by the failures of adults and politicians to act. So I think, you know, the kids are all right. The kids are already doing it. They're already being creative and using new platforms to speak truth to power. I guess I don't know if I have any tips per se, because I'm not a creative person. It's just so fun to watch all these texts, and you know, I was laughing at them, and then to be able to enjoy them and also analyze them. But I leave some of that creativity up to the more creative people, I guess.
I'm also thinking of the Yes Men and how the Yes Men have for years also pulled a fast one on sort of corporate figures and politicians, where they've literally pulled pranks that have been very successful pranks and ended up on national television, sometimes international television, saying, you know, putting words in the mouth of corporate actors, and climate is a big issue for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was another group that, unfortunately, you know, I had the DVD and I was just like, oh, I could could have written this book for 5 more years. There's just so many, you know, Portlandia, there's Portlandia episodes I wanted to talk about, South Park episodes. So yeah, the Yes Men were one of those groups that didn't make the cut, not because they weren't, you know, doing the kind of work I'm talking about, but just at some point I just had so many examples I had to stop. But absolutely, you can see how far that irreverence can get you, right? And just how, actually what I appreciate about them is how they have this sort of deadpan affect, and they're sort of, it's like a mock seriousness, right? And through that mock seriousness, you recognize how ridiculous the system is, how ridiculous political inaction is, and so forth. So yeah, I think they're a great example, and they would be great role models for young people coming up these days.
Do you feel that you might have also written this book to help stave off some of your own feelings of angst about the environment? I mean, it's really hard to remain optimistic at this moment in time.
No, it was definitely therapeutic. Just again, being able to laugh. When you work on environmental studies, you don't often get chances to laugh. And yeah. So I think I was just very hungry for, or maybe even desperate for finding these examples. So I think that helped a lot. And you know, some days you just feel like, well, we're going to hell in a handbasket, but we're still going to fight the good fight. And there's actually irony in that as well, right? The keeping on despite not very positive signs about the effectiveness of our activism. There's something very ironic and maybe absurdist in that. But I think that's just the mode I have to exist in. That's the mode a lot of people exist in, is, you know, we don't know if this is going to help, but we're going to try and see where it goes. It's the only thing we can do.
Right. In fact, in the absence of enough political action, I'm so glad you brought up, in a way, it is one of the only things we can do, this coping mechanism. If we're going down, at least we'll go down with a fight, and we'll go down with a smile on our face rather than gloomily. It's tough when wildfires are burning up and down, you know, our state here in California, and you had, you know, 85 people losing their lives. And countless numbers of people losing their livelihoods and their homes. It's not an easy thing to feel lighthearted about, but in the end, it is also a very human thing to do, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. And there's a spectrum as well. You know, what I say in this book is that I don't think, quote unquote, bad environmentalism is the only answer, right? Maybe it's the answer for some people. Maybe it's the answer for people like me. I do think there are those moments where you just don't laugh, right? There's those moments where you can't find a single funny or a single hopeful thread to find in a news story. But, you know, I just think that this is one of the things we can do, so we might as well explore it.
Might as well. I want to thank you so much, Nicole, for joining us today. Good luck to you.
Great. Thank you. Bye.
Nicole Seymour is an assistant professor of English at California State University at Fullerton. Her earlier book is Strange Natures, Futurity, Empathy, and the Queer Ecological Imagination. We've been discussing her new book, Bad Environmentalism, Irony, and Irreverence in the Ecological Age. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes, and our video channel on Vimeo.